Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
It's over 2 months since the devastating earthquake that hit Syria and Turkey on the 6th of February, killing over 50,000 people. 2 months on, how is the recovery and cleanup operation going, and what psychological damage are people going through as a result of the disaster? To discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Razan Ibrahim, who is an Irish-Syrian journalist based here in Dublin. And I'm also joined by Andrew Finkel, who is a Turkey-based journalist. Very good morning to you both. Andrew, to you first, 2 months on, 9 weeks on, in fact, how has Turkey been coping?
Well, it's a slow business. I've been speaking to people who are heading the relief efforts down in the region, and they say this isn't the work of a day, this isn't the work of a month, this is something that's going to take a huge amount of time. There's an enormous number of people who still lack adequate shelter. There's, if you think there were, you know, over 650,000 dwellings that were, or units that were destroyed by the earthquake. Housing all those people is an enormous task. People are living in containers. People are living in tent cities. People are immigrating to the larger cities, those who can. So it's an enormous problem, and the impact will be there for a long time to come.
Razan, what have you been hearing about Syria and how it's coping?
It is, I'd say, similar to Turkey, but still the impact on the Syria is more devastating because of the lack of help and support and the humanitarian aid, especially at the start of the earthquake. People till today still live in tents. They are afraid to live in buildings. One of the Syrian men I was talking to, he said to me, "I will never ever go back to a building anymore. Tent is my home and it will be my home," because of the fear of all the trauma around it. Rescue operation, of course, like there are still people under the rubble. The bodies are not discovered. People, we don't know where are they, you know, lost people. And what I would like to say as well, the devastation, as you mentioned, Philip, on the mental health issue is something, it is underreported, but it is huge. And it is an absolute devastation in terms of the mental health issues currently. And there is very, very little, or I'd say non-existing, support for mental health for people in North Syria and also in areas where it is under the regime control. So unfortunately, this is a hugely important impact of the earthquake, and it is unreported currently.
Indeed, I mean, an enormous injury to visit upon an already traumatised people. Andrew, can we talk numbers for a second? There's still a question mark about the true death toll here. Are we any closer to knowing that figure? Do you have
Not. I mean, the Turkish government keeps a very tight lid on reporting out of the region. If you say things that are at odds with the government's official line, you can face prosecution. So the official death toll is around 50,000, but if you think of the number of units that were destroyed, many people speculate that the number might even be twice that. So it's a huge figure, mm-hmm. and of course the reason it is so high is because people were allowed to build outside of the code. In other words, there were the substandard dwellings, there were amnesties for illegal constructions in what was a known earthquake zone. So that is why. Even 50,000 is a huge number, but if it's larger than that, that's really the reason why.
You have, in a sense, answered my next question already, which was going to be that in the early days after the earthquake, there was signs of the Erdogan government showing a politicized response. Is that still the case now? Or because there is an election in the offing, is there any sense in which the people of the region are benefiting?
Well, they're benefiting to some extent, of course, but it's hard to know exactly how that can happen. The government is sort of monopolizing the relief effort. If private firms send relief down, they have government relief stickers on their trucks. And as you say, the government is facing a poll. The Erdogan government, which has been in power for nearly 20 years, over 20 years in Turkey, is facing its biggest challenge yet. It's hard to see how the earthquake could actually increase their support. The government was slow to react. The people may not desert the government entirely, its supporters. This is, the region is a place where the government does enjoy strong support. They may not completely run to the opposition, but it's impossible in such a closely tight run election that the government would actually increase its support. So they are facing, as people are facing, an existential crisis on the ground. The government is facing what may be an existential crisis to remain in power.
Razan, is there any sign of the Assad government being in any way impacted by this? I mean, after everything that they've been through in the course of the last 10 years and have still managed to cling to power, you can't imagine that even a natural disaster of this scope is going to weaken that hold.
Unfortunately, this crisis and the devastation of the earthquake was used by Syrian regime to trying to maintain their image and trying to pretend they are doing good for the people. But we all know that on the ground, the reality is completely different to what is the Syrian regime is trying to do, especially to have renew relations with other Arab countries where they helped sending aid, humanitarian aid to the Syrian government. And we all know that on the ground is completely different story. The Syrian government took control of all these aids and they used it for their benefit, not for the real people and the impacted people on the ground, which is a really, really devastating picture to see right now. It is like the humanity of the Syrian people, their future, their destiny is being played. It's now a political game and it's being used by Syrian regime to gain more acknowledgement from other surrounding Arab countries, which is absolutely devastating to see.
Razan, if European governments, indeed, if private citizens would have reason to doubt or not have confidence that the money that is being donated is getting to where it is needed, what can they do?
It is a really good question and valid, which is as well because of the complexity of the political conflict in Syria makes donation is like more complex. You know, people, they don't know if these donations are actually going directly to the people, which is a big question to ask. The reality is there should be help to the people. The European government should be really monitoring very closely for each of these donations, where it is going, how it is being used. Is it being used directly impacted people, helping people on the ground? This is a big, big issue and big operation that we should keep an eye too, which is, it is hard, you know, it will be manipulated, there is no question. But at least if there is maybe 10% of these donations is going to the people, I honestly, personally say at least it is something, you know, because people need a euro, a penny, and they will survive on that. And that is why, like any little money or any little donation and support, it is a huge impact on the life of the people.
Andrew, has the Turkish government, has anybody managed to put an estimate on how much it's going to cost to rebuild the region?
Well, I've been seeing estimates in the nature of $80 billion. There's, you know, 2 million people who have to be rehoused. I mean, the good news and the bad news is that this is a less prosperous part of the country. So the actual impact on GDP will be less in say, had the earthquake occurred in the industrialized west of the country. So, in terms of production and whatever, the impact has been substantial, but not as great as it might have been. In other words, it's within the bounds of the capabilities of the Turkish economy to rebuild this. It's simply a question of organization and time. I mean, what Turkey does well is construct houses and apartments and buildings, but of course you can't safely pour concrete when the earth is not yet stable. There was a There was an earthquake yesterday in Karamanmarash, which is near one of, which was one of the epicenters of the quake. Not a large earthquake, but just a warning that you can't actually start to reconstruct until the land is stabilized. So it's a substantial problem of how to rebuild, you know, during such a period.
From what you're saying as well, Razan, it seems that aftershocks are still dictating events on the ground in Syria as well.
Absolutely. And till today, as I mentioned, people are afraid to go back to their homes. The insomnia, people, they can't sleep. Children, there is a huge problem in terms of like the mental health, sleeping, anxiety, fear, any little incident, it is really it's reacted by shock by people, and especially by children. And I have to say, actually, children are paying the heaviest price of the aftermath of the earthquake. Schools are being impacted, the education, and we already had lost generation in 10 years. Now, the impact as well on all terms of education, schooling and teaching has a double impact on the people. And, you know, one of the things as well we are seeing currently is the political side of the whole humanitarian that really devastated all Syrians in general. And one story actually to mention here, how it is really hard and tough on the people, especially for rescue operations. One of the graves in Idlib, they did not know whose the girl is. So they wrote on the grave, "This grave or for a little girl, and she is wearing a green jumper." And nobody knows the identity or the name or anything. So there is a really lack of understanding the humanitarian and the psychological and human side of this earthquake. That is, the impact will really stay long and long in years.
The grave of the girl in the green jumper. It really is quite a poignant image. Razan Ibrahim and Andrew Finkel, thank you both very much. Coming up after the break, who owns the music if it's created by artificial intelligence?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.